Shane Jones is with us today. Tēnā koe, Shane. Good to catch up with you again.
Morena, morena, morena. Excuse the mare mare, the frog in the throat, e mana. Despite the arrival of Kōang of spring, someone seems to have given me a lurgy, but it cannot be transmitted over the phone, e mana.
Tēnā koe. And you've got to address your frog-eating ways, Mr. Jones. Thank you for thank you for your time. Hey, Shane. Wind farm technology. You are not necessarily a guy who turns his back on opportunity, and so I wouldn't say you're an advocate for extractive industries, but you certainly consider the benefits economically to communities. We've had this type of discussion before. There's a push to develop wind farms offshore in Taranaki now, we hear too. The consortium behind that tunnel are looking at Waikato also. They reckon they can generate plenty of megawatts of power. Do you, from the get-go, turn your back on such ideas, or do you think these are worth considering? Significantly sized wind farms just off our coastline.
I think it's an inevitability, both solar and wind. I know that there are folk who fear that it disfigures the aesthetic quality of either the coastal environment or the physical landscape. But no economy can continue to grow or meet new pressures of an economic or social nature without affordable energy. If you have any doubt about that, look at the woes afflicting Europe. So it's really important that whoever the promoters are of these initiatives, that Transpower, that owns the transmission capacity, has the ability to transport the power where it's needed. Now, this was something that Taitokiro has been looking at, in particular solar, because I think up here there's a significant number of solar hours that is, I'm told, a lot better than other parts of the country. But whilst the investment might happen, the ability to transmit the energy from the site of the generation, Tamanui Te Rā or Tawhiri Mate, whichever one you're going to pursue, you can't guarantee that there's enough industry next door, so you have to transmit the energy. And at the moment, for a lot of our provincial areas, an enormous pipe is needed, and they've got the figurative equivalent of a garden hose, and that's why a lot of developments haven't proceeded.
You were seen eating amphibious material at the opening of Te Taumata Kupe the other day, which might explain the frog in the throat. Tell us more, please. What pleases you most about the establishment of this facility on the grounds of Te Mahurihuri here in Auckland?
Well, the Te Mahurihuri Marae is named after one of the Hokianga hapū, but it's a celebration of the vision and the effort that lies behind the development of that marae, stemming back to the days of the late John Tawhai, who was an officer in the Māori Battalion, and his sister, the mother of Christine Panapa, a matriarch of that marae. And look, both Winston and I, sadly he wasn't able to make it, have had a long association with that marae. And when the shovel-ready pūtea was made available for various applicants from marae, the Mahurihuri Marae had a project that was not only shovel-worthy, it was shovel-ready. And with the support of Grant Robertson, and as I acknowledged on the marae, I think Calvin and Willie Jackson also, although they had a different role in the last government, they were supportive. And now an architecturally magnificent structure stands there. It's an opportunity for that marae to diversify the types of activity they can offer and the opportunities to make the marae economically self-sufficient. Kupe obviously needs no elaboration, the name of the famous Polynesian navigator. And each tribe has its own kupe story. But the reason that we went there was not only to acknowledge the physical opening of the building, but to stand shoulder to shoulder with the whānau that have cared for and developed that marae over the years. And it's I think these things are positive. They're a great focal point for the Māori community. That particular marae is widely used by corporate visitors, council visitors, various bureaucrats and other community groups. And indeed, one of the most pleasant afternoons I've spent in many a year was listening to John Rawls try out his vocal cords about 10 years ago. So there's been a hell of a lot of interesting and enjoyable activities at that marae, not just the traditional affairs that you associate with a marae.
Yeah. You've been there a long time, mate. I remember when it was a tin shed back in the day and seeing you there. So it's really developed into a real taonga for those who call Tāmaki Makaurau home. Shane, health workers seem to be struggling, yet there doesn't really seem to be a plan that's in place to recruit and foster, I don't know, say nurses, for instance. Should they be getting free training, like apprentices, and maybe even a training allowance?
Look, full marks to John Tamihere. I think I'm taking an idea that I heard John Tamihere refer to, Dale, which was if you want to improve the access of our Pacifica and our Māori young men and women into nursing, if I can take that as an example, then train them in hospitals. Train them in actual health facilities. I think that the whole post-secondary training approach needs to change. My sister trained as a nurse. They were of that generation where they went through the hospital experience. And then it morphed into training, I think, at nurses' academic institution, memory serves me correct, was over the shore. I just feel that after COVID and with a different set of economic circumstances, if you want to boost the number of targeted communities with better nursing graduates, you've got to invert the way we do things at the moment. Many a nurse has told me, Mara, they did the 3 or 4 year degree, they ended up in hospital and they had not been given the basic training. And I if it's not JT, then I apologise, but I'm pretty sure it was a practical idea that JT had been promoting.
Thanks very much, mate. Just finally, you used the word salami politics. It's an interesting term. I haven't heard it used before. So tell us more. Why do you think this government is practicing what you describe as salami politics?
Oh, look, it's a symbolic reference to the fact that it's a bit like Bread and Circus. Grant and Jacinda have really got to dive into the systemic problems now afflicting us in terms of the economy. Whether it's the cost of energy, I mean, we just had a huge report yesterday come out identifying that the cost of energy is now an impediment to our economic resilience. The same thing with labour. Our party were originators, along with Helen Clark, of the RSC scheme. So unless we dive deep, you're not going to, in my view, unwind the knots that are causing our economy to lose its resilience. And this notion that by just tossing 40 million here and 50 million there, post-COVID is going to make a difference, I think that's why I said it's like slicing salami and popping it on a political pizza, which we'll see a lot of next year. Now, it could be that as New Zealanders, we don't like systemic or we don't like major reforms any longer because people are struggling with David Parker's reform and the Three Waters reform, which promises to be a major restructuring, although it's becalmed at the moment because Nanaia has unwisely embroiled it in an iwi debate. But that's what salami politics refers to, Emara.
Good stuff. Thanks very much, Shane. All the best. We'll catch up with you next week. And thanks for your thoughts and time today.
Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe.